Mehmed is still in Adana. What family matters do you have here without him? Huma watched his face for a few heartbeats and then laughed again. You really do not know much about my son's life, do you, sweet boy? She patted his cheek, her hand dry and soft. Come, take me inside. We will catch up. Call for your charming sister so we can reunite our happy band. She will be with the Yanicheris. Since they returned, I have hardly seen her. Huma made an interested sound in the back of her throat, but said nothing. After she was settled in one of the keep's nicest apartments, Radu went to find Lada. He could have sent for her, but he did not want to stay in Huma's company alone. The secret between Lada and himself felt like a burden, but still a bond. With Huma here, it felt like a threat. The Yanicheris, who had arrived with Huma, were unloading gear. "Can you show us the barracks?" one asked. "I am going there now. You can follow." He turned to gesture to the soldier, then froze, trying to place how he knew him. The man's face was round, with full lips over gapped teeth. It promised a heaviness that was at odds with his long limbs and slim build. He looked much younger than Radu had remembered, now that Radu was nearly as tall as him. "Lazar!" Lazar smiled, puzzled. "Do we know each other?" "I have looked for you ever since we got here. I cannot believe this." Radu grasped Lazar's shoulders, and finally Lazar's face erupted in the warm, open smile Radu had found such comfort in a lifetime ago. "The little boy from the stables. Can it be? What are you doing here?" "I have been reassigned to Ilias's men. We all have." "I am so glad. It is a joy to see you. It truly is." Radu could not take his eyes off Lazar's face, could not believe this friend lost to him so long ago was back. It softened some of the sting of his disappointed hopes for Mehmed's return. "My presence does not usually elicit such joy. I will make a point of disappearing from your life for years, only to surprise you again more often." Lazar put an arm around Radu's shoulders, and they walked to the barracks together. Lazar was quickly drawn away by logistical duties, but with a promise that they would be seeing much of each other. Humming with happiness, Radu found Lada. His mood fell as he remembered why he was there. "Huma is here," he said without preamble. Lada flinched, putting away the sword she had been sharpening. "Mehmed?" "No. She wants to see us." "I do not wish to see her, Lada," Radu said. And Lada hung her head, resigned. She had to know, as he did, that Huma could always have whatever she wanted of them. When Radu and Lada entered the sitting room, Huma had her hands buried in a large piece of carefully embroidered cloth. She looked up, smiling brightly. "Lada, dear girl, do you have any threat?" Radu did not understand the humorless, near hysterical laugh that burst out of Lada's mouth. "No," she said, shaking her head, "I have no threats. Not a single one." Huma raised an eyebrow at Lada's outburst, then swept her eyes up and down Lada as though she were a crumb on the floor. "I see you have not given up your pursuit of becoming a man." "I have no desire to be a man," Lada snapped, coming back to herself. "And yet, you wear trousers and train with the Yanicheris." "Yes, when otherwise I could be sitting in this room, with you, invisible, sewing and growing old. How strange I should choose something else." Huma tisked. "There is great power in being a woman. You are ruining your chances. There is much I could do with you, if you chose to let me." Lada turned to leave, but Huma cleared her throat, patting the space beside her. Scowling, Lada slouched against the wall, watching with hooded eyes. "What did you want to talk about, Huma?" Radu asked. The longer she was here without telling them the reason, the more nervous he became. Why was Mehmed not back yet? Has something happened in Adirna? Was Huma here to tell them their plot had been discovered and Mehmed hated them? Radu clutched his hands together, knuckles white. Huma ignored him, picking at colored strands that trailed from her embroidery. Tell me, have you ever heard of Theodora of Byzantium? Larda leaned her head back, raising her eyes in exasperation. Does she so too? Actually, she was a prostitute. Radu sat on a bench near Huma, confused but intrigued. This did not sound like the beginning of a way to tell them that Mehmed wanted them dead for taking the throne from him. She lived nearly 1,000 years ago in Byzantium, when Byzantium was still Byzantium, and not a single sad city clinging to life behind its walls. Her father trained bears, and her mother was an actress. Huma said the word actress with a knowing smirk that implied all the other duties an actress would have had. Theodora followed in her footsteps, becoming quite accomplished at everything she did. There are some interesting stories about her early life, but I will skip those, as they are not polite for mixed company. She glanced at Radu, who looked away, trying not to blush. Why she would think those stories fine to share with Larda, but not him, he did not know. Why are you telling us this? Larda said, her voice flat. I am doing you a favor. Be gracious. Theodora, after many years, ended up accepting Christianity and living an honest but simple life of spinning wool near the palace. That is where she met Justinian, Emperor Justinian. Perhaps it was her cleverness that attracted him, her humble roots, her experience. Regardless, he fell in love with her. He threw out the laws that prevented him from marrying an actress, and she was crowned empress. Not empress consort, mind you. Full empress, full partner with her husband. Imagine. Huma paused, her gaze going far away and soft. Then she returned to herself. She went from entertaining men on stage and behind it to ruling all of Byzantium. She crushed a rebellion when her husband would have run. She improved laws for all women under her rule, and she helped build the most beautiful cathedral in all the world, the Sancta Sophia. It stands in Constantinople to this day as a testament to what Theodora and her husband accomplished together. Huma leaned forward. She never picked up a sword, but 30,000 traitors died under her command. She was a prostitute, bowing to any man with enough coin, then a woman who never again bowed to anyone. And you think she did that? Wearing trousers. She still needed a man, Larda said, her eyes slits. Huma showed her teeth in a predatory approximation of a smile. You understand the story perfectly. She coughed, a dry, rattling sound, and it was a while before she could speak again. Can I get you anything? Radu asked. She waved him away. I understand your position. Better than you know, she said to Larda. But you are holding Mehmed back. Make a decision, Larda. If you do not wish to marry my son, release him. Larda stood straight, sputtering. I have no hold on Mehmed. Radu, too, could not believe what he was hearing. There has never been talk of marriage to anyone. He looked to Larda for confirmation. It was the three of them, together, and had always been. There was no love between Larda and Mehmed that Radu and Mehmed did not also share. No, he would have seen it. And Radu and Mehmed shared the bond of a brotherhood of faith, which surely drew them closer than any bond Mehmed shared with Larda. Huma shook her head. Mehmed wanted to return to Amasya immediately. I persuaded him to stay in Adirna, to create connections, build a foundation of strength. Little has changed since he left. I have nothing, not the esteem of my husband. She spat the word like a fig gone rotten, and not the promise of a son who will ever be able to keep the throne I have secured for him. He should be capitalizing on his success against Hunyadi, not yearning to return to this forsaken place. But he has been so content with his dear, faithful friends here, that he has not been paying attention to the things that matter. So I tell you again, let him be free of your hold. A chill flowed from Larda's mouth, her cold fury palpable. You will have to excuse my confusion. Freedom is not something with which I am well acquainted. This is foolish, Radu held out his hands and tried to sound light-hearted. Mehmed has spent all this time studying, preparing to rule, and we would never hold him back from that. You know that we would do, have done, anything to protect Mehmed.
Oh yes, I know. But he does not know, does he?
And if I ever suspect you two are getting in my way, I will not hesitate to remove you. Radu's blood went cold. Huma could have them killed, doubtless. But worse still, she could tell Mehmed the truth of how he had lost the throne. They would lose him forever. Radu could not imagine a life without him. No, that was not the problem. The problem was that he could perfectly imagine a life without Mehmed. He had lived it all the years of his childhood, and he never wished to go back to that cold and lonely state, even if Larda was forced along with him. Huma stood, letting her embroidery drop to the ground. I have other business to attend to. Do not forget what we have spoken of. As she left, she stepped on the cloth, as though the hundreds of hours of work that had gone into the stitches were nothing. 27. 2 weeks after Huma's painful visit and quick return to the capital, a full month after the Yanacheris returned, but Mehmed did not, Larda once again made excuses for why she could not join Nikolai's contingent for practice. Everything was different now. Before, she had striven to prove herself the fastest, the cleverest, the most ruthless. But after Ivan's lewd attack and Nikolai's protective response, she had seen that none of it mattered. She would never be the best Yanacheri, because she would never be a Yanacheri. She could never be powerful on her own, because she would always be a woman. She had thought the return of the soldiers would signal an end to the directionless melancholy that had plagued her during Mehmed's six-month absence, but it only sharpened it. Even Radu was distracted and cranky, worried that Mehmed would never return, worried about what Huma would say to keep him away. The sun beat brutally overhead as Larda stripped down to her underclothes. She had taken to wearing long tunics tied with a sash, with loose breeches underneath. Huma disapproved, but if it scandalized anyone in the fortress or the village, no one bothered or dared to say so. She had also had new leather cuffs made to wear on either wrist, a hidden knife in both. These she unbuckled and laid on her clothes alongside her boots. Finally, she undid the white scarf that bound her tangled and knotted hair and lifted it from her neck. She held the scarf out, looking at it, wondering if she always chose white because it looked like a Yanacheri cap. But nothing would ever look enough like one. With a sigh, she slipped into the hidden pool, nestled among rocks and hidden by trees. The water was a deep green, and so cold it took her breath away and left her toes numb. It was still their glorious secret, a place that felt truly theirs. When they got back to Amasya, Mehmed had been so sad, so frustrated. He had not wanted to lose the throne. So Larda and Radu had bent all their attentions to distracting him. They made a game of how often they could evade Mehmed's guards and retreat to the pool. It had been an escape they had all needed,
But with Mahmed gone, Radu had not wanted to come here. Lada, too, had not been here since, dreading the quiet and the solitude. Until today. Everywhere she went, no matter how many people surrounded her, she knew now she was alone. She may as well be alone in a place that was beautiful. Closing her eyes, she floated on her back and let herself hang, only her face above the water. The sunlight, brilliant and hot, in contrast to the cold water. Her breasts floated up beneath her clinging undershirt, which she found both amusing and oddly disturbing. While she had not grown much in stature, becoming thicker and more solid instead of taller, her breasts had become soft, full things. She had been forced to adjust her knife-throwing and her archery, always her weakest skill, to account for the unwieldy changes. And now here they were, bobbing gently in the water, unavoidable. There was something claustrophobic about breasts. Her nipples, too, seemed animated with a will of their own. Sometimes they were flat and small, other times they puckered and stuck out. She suspected it was the cold now, but on a few other occasions it had happened. Her nurse could have explained it to her. Or Huma. Though she would cut off her breasts before asking Huma for advice about her body. Sometimes she wondered what it would be like to have a mother. Would she have guided Lada through her traumatic first bleeding, reassured her that no, she was not dying, helped her hide the evidence for longer than she had been able to? No. Her mother would have crawled away in terror, or made the nurse do it. Lada let her face go underneath the water. A mother. A nurse. Even a friend. Perhaps, if she had more women in her life, she would not feel so outraged at the physical and social demands of being one. She thought of needlework, of the weight of layers of dresses and the pinching of shoes, of downcast eyes and well-timed smiles, of her mother, of Huma, Halima, and Mara. All the ways to be a wife, all the ways to be a woman. No, more women in her life would change nothing. And she could still learn to shoot a bow better, breasts be damned. She put her hands on either breast and squeezed until they hurt, trying to figure out what Ivan had wanted. What could possibly be the allure of the fleshy mounds? And then she screamed, as a body half landed on her, pushing her underwater. Choking, she clawed her way to the surface, only to find Mahmed's smiling face inches from her own. Her anger at being startled was washed away, carried in rivulets down her face and hair. He looked different. He had aged in the months he had been away, while the changes that growing had carved into Radu's face made her brother more beautiful. The changes in Mahmed's made him look harder, distant, less like the crying boy she had met at the fountain, and more like what she felt a sultan should be. But now, so close to her, the hard planes of his face softened into familiarity as he flashed the smile that had not changed since he was a boy. His lips were soft and full and welcoming, but his eyes were sly. It was his lips she found herself unable to look away from. "Did you miss me?" he teased. Sincerity betrayed her, tumbling out of her mouth in a whisper before she could rein it in. "I did." He put his hands on her waist, as he had done so many times last summer, pulling her under, pushing her, playing. But this time, he left his hands there. They were warm through the thin material of our underclothes. His voice was husky, lower than it had been. "I missed you, too." He pulled her closer, and Lada warred within herself. Her inclination was to push him away, to cut him with a clever, sharp remark, to find something, anything to do with her hands, her worthless hands that floated uselessly at her sides. Huma's words echoed in her head. "Set him free." Did she truly hold him that way? Did she want to? As though heeding her desperation, but heedless of the confusion and fear ringing through her like the clash of blades. Her hands lifted and grabbed the back of Mahmed's head, tangling in his wet hair. And then her lips, from which nothing but poison had ever dropped, found his, and were baptized with sweet fire, reborn into something new and wild. His mouth answered hers, lips parting, his teeth catching hers, her tongue meeting his. It felt like fighting. It felt like falling. It felt like dying.
Mehmed?
Radu called, his voice muffled and indistinct, as if Lada's head was still underwater. She and Mehmed paused their mouth-to-mouth combat, and Lada realized her legs were wrapped around his waist, his hands around the backs of her thighs, their chests pressed together. She pushed him away, dropping beneath the water and swimming to the other side just as Radu appeared from the trees and jumped into the pool between them. He burst up, water raining from his hair, droplets of sunshine glittering in it. His laughter matched, ringing with joy. Mahmed's laughter was not quite so genuine. His gaze burned into Lada's. His eyebrows formed a question or a promise. She could not tell which.
Mehmed is back!
Radu shouted. I think she noticed, Mehmed said.
Lada!
Radu swam over and pushed her shoulder playfully.
The pool is not that cold. Why are you trembling?
Lada tore her eyes away from Mehmed's. No reason. 28. Radu laughed, breathless, and dropped his wooden practice sword.
I am finished.
Lazar's lazy smile belied the perspiration beading on his forehead and upper lip.
You've gotten quite good.
He adjusted his long white cap, a few strands of dark hair peeking out. Lazar was one of the happiest parts of Radu's life, second only to getting Mehmed back the month before. Although, at Mahmed's suggestion, Radu had been training with the Yanacheris for a couple of years now. Having a familiar face among them made it enjoyable rather than a chore. Lazar always volunteered when Radu visited the barracks, looking for a training partner. Quick with a sword and quicker with a laugh, Lazar was the same bright spot he had been in Turgo Viste. Their 10-year age gap seemed so much smaller than it had when Radu was a boy. Lazar set his sword next to Radu's.
Very soon, you may even best your sister.
Radu leaned against the wall, shaking his head.
Do not let her hear you say that, or she will spend even more time training than she already does. I never see her as it is.
Lazar raised a black eyebrow.
And that is a bad thing.
She is my family.
Yes, you poor thing.
Radu laughed, reaching for a bucket of water. He scooped some into his mouth, then put a wet hand to the back of his neck. Lazar leaned over, shoulder brushing Radu's, and took the bucket. He pulled off his cap and upended the whole thing over his head. Radu jumped away, but his side still got soaked.
Wasteful cur!
Lazar's smile turned his face from boyish to wicked. He held the bucket behind his back.
Come and get it, then.
There was something in his voice that gave Radu pause, made a strange buzzing void come between his heart and his ribs. But then he heard his name being called. He turns to find Mehmed at the far wall of the small practice enclosure.
Mehmed!
Radu called, beaming. It still delighted him to see Mehmed after such a long absence. His face was always surprising, like a question Radu had yet to find the answer to. Mehmed gestured animatedly, his hands too excited to be still.
Tonight at supper we host a dervish, who has travelled here by way of India. Wait until you see his feet and his face. He is truly a holy man. Get cleaned up and come to my rooms.
Radu nodded, Mehmed's excitement contagious. Ever since Mola Gurana's death the previous year, Mehmed sought more and more outliers in the faith. Dervishes who took vows of poverty and wandered the earth, scholars who studied to better understand the words of the prophet, even teachers deemed heretical. He was never content with a simple, unquestioning practice of Islam. It was one of the things Radu loved about him. Studying and learning at his side had always been an adventure. Bidding Mehmed a temporary farewell, Radu returned to Lazar, his steps buoyed with anticipation. Lazar's eyes narrowed, his lips twisted in a back-market imitation of a real smile.
"Watch yourself, little brother."
Radu paused in picking up the weapons they had left scattered around the yard.
"What do you mean?"
"There are some things it is not acceptable to want, but there are ways around it, and those who will look the other way. And then there are some things that it is impossible to want, even the mere act of wanting, if noticed by the wrong people, can get you killed." He gave a heavy, meaningful look at the spot where Mehmed had been.
"Be more careful."
Radu's throat constricted, his heart racing so he thought he might die of it. What had Lazar seen? What did he suspect? Could he tell simply by watching Radu that something was very wrong with him, when even Radu did not understand what it was? All he knew was that there was some light, some pull, some fire that Mehmed carried, and Radu only felt truly alive when he was nearby. Was that wrong? Lazar put his long fingers on the back of Radu's neck, let them linger for a few impossibly long seconds, the time beating past in the terrified pulse of Radu's blood. "Let me know if you ever want to talk." Radu watched him walk away, soaked tunic clinging to his broad shoulders, and knew he would never, ever seek Lazar out again. Because whatever this secret was, whatever this question Radu now knew he did not understand, whatever this aching, secret hollow inside of him meant, an answer felt far more terrifying than any question could ever be. 2 days later, the conversation with Lazar still felt like sand against sunburned skin, a prickling discomfort when Radu least expected it. He sat in a garden tucked into a far corner of the keep, hidden in the cool, dim shade of a tree overburdened with weeping branches. Maybe he would ask Mehmed to have Lazar sent to another part of the country. He knew Mehmed would. But what if Mehmed asked why? How would he answer? He had told Mehmed how happy he was to be reunited with his old Yanacheri protector. He should stop worrying. Mehmed was his friend, his dearest friend, his only friend. Perhaps Lazar had never had a friend like Mehmed. He could not possibly understand how Radu felt. It was foolishness for Lazar to imply there was something wrong, something dangerous with loving Mehmed more than anyone. Mehmed was the heir to the throne. They should all feel that way about him. Mehmed had brought him safety and hope, helped nourish the seed of God planted by Kumal's kindness, when Radu needed it most. Of course Radu valued Mehmed above all others. He even loved him more than he loved Lada, which filled him with guilt. But Lada had let him be hurt on her behalf, all that time ago, by their first Ottoman tutor. Radu had never forgotten the way she sat back, impassive, as he was beaten for her failure to respond. Mehmed would never have let that happen. His love for Mehmed made perfect sense. Why, then, did Lazar's look still make him feel strange and wrong? He was distracted by the sound of feet stomping gracelessly along the gravel path. Well hidden, he peered through the curtain of leaves. Lada was prowling up and down, turning in one direction before jerking herself back in the other, as though her body were engaged in an argument that neither side was winning. After a few minutes of furious indecision, during which an entire generation of flowers was mercilessly decapitated, Lada went suddenly and shockingly still. Not her usual type of watchful stillness, but a dreamy, placid cessation of movement. Her limbs, normally so rigid, looked almost soft as she lifted a hand and traced her lips, eyes closed. Radu held his breath, watching, wondering what was going on in his sister's head. It had been a long time since he wished he could understand what she was thinking. Most of the time he knew, and wished he did not. But in this moment, she was transformed from his determined, brutal sister into a girl. That was it. Larda looked like a girl. He exhaled sharply, holding back a wondering laugh. In a flash, his sister turned from a girl back into a predator. Her eyes found the source of the noise, and a dagger flashed in either hand. "Who is there?" she demanded, feet spread, stance low and balanced. "Please do not kill me," Radu pushed aside two curtains of branches, holding his hands out in mock supplication. "Were you spying on me?" Her voice was shrill, panicked, as though she had been caught at something devious. But no, that was not it. Radu had caught her doing terrible things during their childhood. Once, he found her in the stables, choking Vlad Dinesht, an insufferable son of rival boyars. When Radu shouted in surprise, Larda had merely looked up and calmly informed him that Vlad had told her she was worth less than the bastard son of their father. She was punishing him and wondered how long she would have to choke him until he fainted. Interrupted, she released the red-faced, coughing boy, who ran away sobbing and never played with them again. But thinking about the focused, thoughtful look on Larda's face, Radu had occasionally wondered whether, if he had not happened upon the scene, she would have continued to see how long it took for the boy to die. Comparing her unruffled reaction then with her rage now, Radu's curiosity grew tenfold. He hid it with a placating look of combined fear and confusion. "I did not know you were here until you shouted," he said. Big eyes, round mouth, palms up. It was an expression that had gotten him out of trouble too many times to count. His eyes were so large anyhow, when he widened them like this, no one believed him capable of guile. Stealing food from the kitchens, being caught eavesdropping, forgetting Yanacheri protocol. The big eyes and confused apology worked for everything. Larda should have known better than to fall for it, but her shoulders relaxed and she tucked the knives away. "What are you doing, skulking around?" He held the branches for her. She hesitated, then climbed under the tree with him. It was snug, but they both fit, backs curled against the trunk. The air was cooler, damp with the smell of young green things and old, wizened growth. "It is nice here," he said. Larda nodded, her mouth grim with the concession. "It feels secret. Safe." She spoke in Valachian as she toyed with the small leather pouch she always wore around her neck. Radu had heard her speak their language with Nikolai, but after she let him be beaten by their first Ottoman tutor all those years ago, he almost always refused to speak it with her. They spoke only other tongues to each other. Hearing the language of their shared childhood now was a strange and startling intimacy. "I have never been to these gardens," she said. Radu tapped the dagger strapped to her wrist, trying to keep the gesture light to avoid puncturing this precarious and precious moment that had descended between them. "Well, it is good you came prepared, because the gardens are frequently populated by assassins and thieves." Larda elbowed him sharply in the ribs. From her, it was almost like a hug. They had grown closer in the months of Mahmed's absence. Now, wrapped in leaves and the language of their childhood, Radu wondered at how they had let so much space expand between them, and whether it was possible that they were finally closing it. A voice drifted along the path. "Mahmed," Radu whispered. Larda glared in exasperation, switching to Turkish, their moment gone. "Of course it is Mahmed. But where is he going? He told me he had a council today, about province taxes." Radu frowned. "He told me he was meeting with the Yanacheri leaders, to go over budgets." They waited. two pairs of eyes peering out, searching for the object of their desire. He walked past in the company of a man Radu did not know, but he recognized the clothes, the white robes and the shaved head. A eunuch. Mahmed laughed as he drew even with the tree, and for a breath Radu thought he had spied them and was amused at the strangeness of their hiding spot. But he continued on with the eunuch, the comfortable match of their paces and the ease of space between them, speaking of familiarity. When the two men passed out of the garden, Lada lunged out from under the tree and followed. Radu ran to catch up with her. He had never been through the gate at the far side of the gardens. Lada paused, peering carefully over, then opened the gate. A path wound along the back of the fortress, still walled in but narrow and unusually private. They turned a corner and Lada stopped so abruptly that Radu ran into her. Ahead of them was a building, one Radu had never seen before. Judging from Lada's expression, he assumed she was equally surprised by its existence. The walls around it were high and crawling with ivy, but the two heavy entrance gates were thrown open. Through them they saw a section of sumptuous garden, vibrant to the point of garishness, trees dripping fruit and flowers painting every surface in a riot of color. Radu felt a flare of resentment that Mahmed had kept the most beautiful part of the grounds from them, until he realized that waiting in the garden were several women. They mirrored the flowers, petaled and swirling with color, beautiful with the same temporary vibrancy, and one of them, standing in the center, held an infant. In the time it took Radu to process that it was Mahmed who walked confidently forward and took the baby, Mahmed who laughed and held the infant up as though it were a piglet at a market, Mahmed who placed a wondering kiss on its forehead. The gates swung closed and sealed them off from the bright dream within. Radu could not say whether the gates actually made a deep clanging sound, or if he merely felt it inside. "Did you know?" Lada's voice came from far away, from underwater, from a cavern the depths of which would never see the light. "No." It was an age before Radu realized the sun was setting, and he was alone. Still standing, staring at the gate and the mystery of the Mahmed he had seen inside. The Mahmed who had left him behind. That night, Radu and Lada sat alone in Mahmed's chambers, waiting far past the normal time when he usually met them for a late meal. Neither spoke nor looked at the other. Radu was cloaked in a suffocating blanket of misery and hurt. How could Mahmed have done this? How could he be a father? Radu was hurt because Mahmed had not told him of this development. That was why. That was the reason for this horrible, clawing feeling. The Tsar's knowing smile. The door opened and Radu cried out with relief. Mahmed was here. He would explain. It would make sense and things would go back to how they had been. Radu would know how to feel again. Lada, too, stood. Leaning forward, her face was a mask. Mahmed's face, however, was like the desert during a windstorm. Everything in his features was ripped away to one raw expression of rage. He threw a heavy piece of parchment onto the floor in front of them. Lada picked it up. She frowned, etching her own trails of rage. "What is this? Are you mocking me?" Mahmed shook his head. "I assure you, I am as surprised as anyone." He held a hand up and out toward her, as though calming a spooked horse. Radu looked from one to the other. There was something off there, something new, something he had missed while lost in his own swirl of confusion. What was it? What had happened? Panicked, Radu tried to snatch the parchment from Lada, but her grip held tight. A smile twisted Mahmed's lips as his words came out in the same manner. "From my father. Apparently, I have been invited to my own wedding." 29. Adana, Ottoman Empire. There was gold everywhere. Gold on fingers fat and thin, gold in noses long and stubby, gold in ears and on foreheads and necks and wrists, gold on arms, gold on ankles. The most gold on a pair of delicate ankles peeking out from beneath silk trimmed with gold threads, weak ankles that could never carry their owner in a fight or keep up in a race. Siti Hatun, Mahmed's bride, had detestable ankles. They were 2 days into the month-long wedding celebrations, and already Lada had a headache from the perfume, the rich food, and the incessant music. She wanted to use the harpist's instrument as a bow and fire arrows of burning incense into the beating gold hearts of everyone here. She had not had even a moment to speak with Mahmed, had not been alone with him once since the pool, since the kiss, since everything became tangled and confusing. And Mahmed smiled and laughed and sat with his slender-ankled bride, his achingly beautiful bride, leaving a charred hollow where he had ignited something deep inside Lada. A young man, as curved and gleaming as a Yanacheri sword, stood on a dais nearby, reciting poetry. His voice was a river, pulling her along, slipping her under the current and spinning her until his tales of valor and love and triumph felt like they were drowning her lungs so she could not breathe. She grabbed a goblet from a meek-eyed servant and drank the sour wine as quickly as she could, trying to wash away the taste of the poet's passion. It surprised her that Mahmed would have wine served at his wedding when he refused to drink on religious principle. But she was very, very glad to have it. On the other side of the cavernous room, beneath a shimmering drape of silk, propped up on velvet pillows, Mahmed and his bride reclined. Everyone pulsed out from them in streams, the beating heart of the empire fed by the love and adoration of the vessels in the room. Lada would rather bleed out than pretend to be happy for him. Lada, Radu's face was as bright as the lamps overhead. May I have this dance? We should talk. I would sooner let the head gardener take me for a walk in the courtyard, she snapped. Radu's face fell. But I had something I wanted to ask you about. A young woman passed deliberately close, looking up at Radu through her eyelashes and smiling so demurely it was almost obscene. Lada realized she had seen Radu dance with nearly every woman present. He had never pursued anyone in Amasya. But there had not been any opportunity. She felt the wine slosh sickeningly in her empty stomach. If Radu wanted advice on courting Ottoman women, he should know better than to come to her. I am sure you can manage perfectly well on your own, she said, sneering. Radu looked hurt, but then his jaw set and he walked away. Frustrated with him, frustrated with herself, Lada turned to flee and found herself face to face with Huma. Her lips were stained a deep red that matched the cloth she was draped in. She looked like a glittering wound. Walk with me, Huma said, holding out a hand. Scowling, Lada let Huma take her elbow and lead her to the far edge of the room, a corner not quite blazing with light from the dangling chandeliers. So many burned so brightly that the ceiling was obscured by a haze of smoke, the patterns there shifting and blurring. Or perhaps Lada had finally had too much to drink. You seem troubled, little one. Lada laughed bitterly, picking at her clothes. She had been dressed by servants every day this week. Though she had tried to insist that she wear the same style of clothes as the Yanacheris, she had been provided with draped dresses and silk shoes. Tonight her dress was a red so deep it looked nearly black, cut lower than she cared for, with a white sash. Her hair had been tamed and pulled back into a series of braids and curls that trailed down her back. She wore her boots, at least. Huma traced a finger along Lada's collarbone. You ought to have a necklace here, to draw attention. She pointed at Lada's breasts. Lada would shoot an incense arrow at Huma first, But looking at the older woman's face, Larda realized Huma was not pleased to be here either. Larda had assumed Huma would be thrilled, in her element as the mother of the groom, preening and parading her new power. She had not wanted Larda to marry Mahmed, and here he was, married to another. Instead, Huma surveyed the room with narrowed eyes. "I have not offered my congratulations," Larda said. Huma huffed, waving a hand sharply. "Let us not pretend. I was not consulted on any of this. It is a political alliance chosen by Murad to secure the eastern borders. An odd move if he was planning to abdicate the throne again soon, now that Mahmed is older." Larda looked at the room through new eyes. None of Mahmed's teachers were here, none of his favorite holy men. No one he had worked with during his brief time as sultan. And yet Kazancha Dogan, who had been the head of the revolt, was here. Surely Mahmed would not have invited him. The veins of power were not, as she had thought, radiating out from the beating heart of the newlyweds. They were radiating out from Murad. "But I thought with the marriage and Mahmed having an heir," Huma laughed darkly. "A baby with a concubine is hardly a guarantee, and a marriage to a Turkmen tribe we are already allied with. This is a move of strengthening, not building, not expanding or creating power and connections for Mahmed. This strengthens Murad and gives no benefit to Mahmed. The baby and this bride mean nothing. They change nothing." Something in Larda's chest loosened, made it easier for her to breathe in the cloying atmosphere. Huma looked at where Siti Hatun's father was talking with inebriated passion to several pashas, who stared over his shoulder at where they would rather be. "Did you know Murad welcomed a son 2 months ago?" Huma asked. "Such a blessing to have produced yet another boy." In the pause, Larda heard a horrible grinding noise she suspected came from Huma's teeth. And such timing. Staging a marriage so soon after, so that everyone can learn of the new heir from Murad himself. Who is to say that, with the heavy encouragement of his trusted Halil Pasha, Murad has not decided to wait out another decade or two in favor of a more pliable heir? "None of this is for Mahmed." Larda leaned heavily against the wall, seeing the celebration for what it was. She knew she ought to feel sick, worried for Mahmed, angry on his behalf, but all she could feel was overwhelming relief. This world, this glittering poem of power that contained no words for her, none of it was his. Did he know? No. Murad is reminding us all that he is strong and virile, and going nowhere. That Mahmed belongs to him, and Huma was cut off by a fit of coughing, something rattling deep inside her. It was the same cough she had had when she visited them in Amasya, but grown much worse. Huma wiped her face with a cloth pulled from her sleeve. A layer of powder came off, revealing dark circles beneath her eyes and hollows where her cheeks had once been full. Her lips pulled back over her teeth, all sensual fullness stretched back to grim hatred. "Everything I have built, all that I have worked toward, is being ripped from me. I cannot bear it. I took everything I could from him. And still, he took more." Her eyes tracked Murad as though she was sighting prey too far off to kill. And in that moment, Huma was no longer threatening to Larda. She was her sister. Murad had taken both of them, forced them into a country and a life neither had wanted. "We will kill him," Larda whispered. "I have tried." "I could do it." Huma tilted her head, considering, then sighed. "No. I do not doubt you could get a knife into the chasm between his ribs, but you could not get out alive. That is not a real victory for you. Stay with Mahmed. Help him. He is our best hope. We must protect our investment." She put a dry, cold hand on Lara's cheek, her face almost tender. Marry him too, if you wish. I was wrong to warn you away. Carve out a life for yourself however you can. No one will do it for you. She nodded toward a group of turbaned and caped young men standing in a cluster near Mahmed's enclosure. Radu stood in the center, laughing, sharply outlined even amid the incense haze. Your brother, though. People will pluck out their own hearts to create a place for him. He will never have to get his hands dirty. She held her hands beside Lada's and smiled. But hands painted red are hands that do what needs to be done. She straightened, letting the mask of playful sensuality fall back onto her face, though it did not fit as well as it had the last time Lada saw her. Then, in a whisper of crimson, she drifted away. Mahmed was inaccessible as the weeks dragged on. They were now 4 weeks into the wedding, and Lada did not know how they had not all died of excessive enjoyment. Even Radu would have been an acceptable distraction at this point, but he was always at the center of gatherings or simply gone. She did not know where he disappeared to, probably celebrations of the celebration, where even more glittering people would fawn over him and his clever, beautiful mouth. Huma's words had stuck with her. Mahmed's position was as precarious as it had ever been, if not more so. And Lada could not forget what had happened the last time they were in Adirna. She still awoke with the taste of blood in her mouth sometimes, the memory of bone beneath teeth. Her hand curled around a dagger that was not there anymore. Nikolai, recently off duty, sighed as he walked with her. The barracks were dark, and they stopped to lean against a wall. Floral perfume hung heavily in the night, but at least out here Lada could breathe. She liked the dark better than all the forced, false light of the wedding nonsense. Nikolai took off his white Yanicheri cap and rubbed his sweat slick hair. I understand why you are concerned about Mahmed's safety, and I agree. But there is a difference between the last time Mahmed was here and now. And what is that? Before, he was under the guard of the old Yanicheri Corps. They had been stationed in the city forever. They have their own politics, their own allegiances, none of which were to him, leaving him vulnerable. This time he is under our guard. We have been with him for years, and he is no longer an insufferable zealot, a brat we cannot respect and care nothing for. We have fought under him, and we will fight for him. You will not find a traitor in our ranks. You know that, Lada. He clapped her on the shoulder. Let Mahmed worry about pleasing his pretty bride. Let us worry about keeping him safe. And what am I to worry about? Nothing. Get some sleep, little dragon. That is an order. He walked into the barracks, joining his fellow soldiers and leaving Lada alone with her worries. They were poor company, nagging and tugging, pulling her hair and whispering in her ear. Mahmed dead. Mahmed in love. Mahmed forgetting she existed. Everyone forgetting she existed. Continuing to exist in a world that cared not one whit whether or not she did. Continuing to exist in a world where she would never be kissed again. Caring whether or not she was ever kissed again, damnable Mahmed, and his lips, and his tongue, and everything that came from them. She needed a job, something real, something she could focus on and channel her energies into. Nikolai did not think Mahmed was in danger, because he did not see how Mahmed could be a threat to anyone. Murad was back, the country was stable, everyone was happy. But as long as Mahmed was alive, there was the promise of him coming to the throne. Who would be threatened most by that? Halil Pasha. Halil Pasha! Lada latched onto him as a new goal. He had always been a menace, had probably even been behind the first assassination attempt. Surely he was still a danger to Mahmed. Lada would follow him, shadow him, see any threat before it even approached Mahmed. Energized by her newfound purpose,
She had no time to waste. She stopped at the harem building, lit up like a bonfire against the night, and asked the eunuch guarding the gate to speak with Huma. Lada had not seen her at the day's celebrations, and this late many guests would already be home and in bed. The eunuch frowned, considering her.
Huma is not well.
She will want to see me. He shook his head, pale skin gleaming dully in the light spilling out of the windows.
She cannot see anyone. I can take her a message.
Lada deflated, already delayed. But no, she did not need Huma's permission or guidance.
Can you tell me where Halil Pasha lives?
With a passive look that spoke of years of training to show no emotion at any request, the eunuch gave her directions to Halil Pasha's grand estate. Lada seeped like a shadow out of the palace grounds and into the nearest quarter, where the wealthiest and most powerful pashas and viziers lived. Halil Pasha's home was massive, a towering testament to his influence and to his regard within Murad's reign. Avoiding the gate, Lada found a narrow alley between Halil Pasha's wall and the next compound, where she had enough leverage to climb the rocks and boost herself into Halil Pasha's grounds. Dropping down, she crouched in stillness, the flagstones beneath her still smelling of sun-warmed dust. A bright mess of voices drifted from the back of the building. Sliding along the wall, she came around a corner to find a courtyard. Lamps were strung like beads, dangling over a gathering still going strong despite the hour. It was smaller than the wedding feasts and dances, obviously a more intimate affair. Lada had no idea what to do with it. It was a waste of her time. She looked toward the main house, which would probably be nearly empty. Going back to the side of the building, she found a small door with piles of vegetable skins and refuse in baskets haphazardly placed near it. Inside was a narrow hallway, the end leading to an overtaxed and exhausted kitchen, still limping along late into the night. To her right was a narrow set of stairs. She took those to the next floor, where she opened a door. This hallway was broad with high ceilings and thick carpets. Lada strode along it, not knowing what she was looking for, but desperate to find something. Low laughter warned her a second too late that she was not alone. She stopped as two men, one facing her and the other looking away, came out of a room. She locked eyes with Radu. His face froze in horror, then smoothed into a smile as he put his hand on his companion's back and pointed at something in the opposite direction of Lada.
Have you ever noticed this portrait of the Pasha? It looks as though it were painted by an elephant, a very old, sick elephant.
The other man laughed, not turning around, and Radu directed a pained and panicked look at Lada, jerking his head toward the servant staircase. She was through it before Radu and his friend reached the painting, then outside and off Halil Pasha's grounds, before humiliation finally came crashing down around her. She had found nothing. Worse, she had been caught. By Radu. What was he doing there? Why did he act as though he knew the house? As though he belonged there? She returned to the palace. Instead of going to her own room, she went to Radu's, where she paced like a caged animal. Alternate rounds of fury and embarrassment warred within her, suspicions rising and then summarily dismissed. Finally, when she thought she would go mad, Radu came back. He closed the door behind himself and then leaned against it, rubbing his head wearily. Lada opened her mouth to berate him, but he beat her.
What were you thinking, Lada? What do you mean, what was I thinking? I was thinking that Halil Pasha threatened Mahmed once before, and he may very well do it again. Yes. But what were you trying to accomplish, sneaking around his home at night? I thought if I could catch him before, if I could discover something, so we would know.
She stopped. She did not know what she had hoped to accomplish. She had simply wanted to act, wanted to do something other than stand in a room full of glittering strangers, watching Mahmed with another woman. Did you take note of Halil Pasha's inner circle? Radu raised his eyebrows, began pacing around her.
Who was at the gathering?
Who talked to whom? Who lingered in conversation with Halil? Lara scoffed. I could never have seen that much and remained hidden. No, you certainly could not.